Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. Today, I'll be chatting with Danielle Byard Jackson. Danielle is a female friendship coach and educator who speaks nationally on the science of women's platonic connections. She's also the author of Fighting for Our Friendships, which is coming out in May of this year. She also has a coaching business, Friend Forward, that is dedicated to teaching women how to create and maintain better female friendships. And her expertise has been featured in the New York Times, NBC News, Psychology Today, Wall Street Journal, Oprah Magazine, Good Morning America, and a host of other media outlets. As the resident friendship expert for the global app Bumble for Friends, Danielle shares her insight weekly on the Friend Forward podcast. She also has viral videos on TikTok and has written for Insider and Harvard Business Review. In today's episode, we talk about ways that you can navigate your current friendships and make new ones once you're a mom, how to handle different parenting styles or issues that come up between friends, what research has to say about quality friendship, and so much more. Let's get started.
Just a little disclaimer before we start this episode. This podcast does not provide medical advice. The information on this podcast is for informational purposes only. No material on this site is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
All right, everyone. Today we have Danielle Byard Jackson. Welcome to the show, Danielle.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to jump into this conversation.
Yeah. So as I was mentioning before we got started, I came across this article this week. And then I started doing the rabbit hole of like clicking some of the links within the article. And just, I'll link them in the show notes because the articles are, it's a kind of like what everybody knows in the back of their head, but just reading it was fascinating because it was like, oh, like I've been thinking about this. And having it all written down really started to come together and make a lot of sense. And, you know, I think, especially after COVID, a lot of these things became more apparent to us because we were forced back inside of our houses and we were forced to live, obviously, a lot differently than what we were used to. And trying to cultivate either new friendships or trying to maintain the ones we already had became more difficult because we weren't able to see those people in person. And so, you know, we definitely gravitated more to using technology. And anyways, all that to say, the first article I had read was an article that was titled "The Way We Live in the US is Not Normal." And so obviously this article is about a lot of different things. And actually it was just a really, really well written piece. So I will link it up in the show notes if you want to read it. But there was an entire section that was dedicated to friendships in general. So the person that wrote the article, she was talking about how she's lived in the United States, but she ended up marrying somebody from Italy. And so after, you know, a period of time, they decided, you know what, like, let's just drop everything and just move to this tiny little town in Italy. And obviously she had all these reasons for it. And she talks about that within the article. But she talks about how, I think she was living in DC, I want to say. It was definitely somewhere where it's more hustle and bustle. There's more opportunities to meet people and like go out with friends and things like that, as opposed to a different type of area, suburban life type thing. But she was talking about how everybody is so concentrated on working and just being busy all of the time and leaving no energy to kind of devote to this connection that we typically have with one another, whether it's our friends or whether it's our neighbors or whether it's our partner. But here in the United States, how we're so fixated on our careers and making money to buy things and not really focusing in on what's important. And she's like, it's so funny because you go to Italy and in Italy, people see their friends every day. They see them every day. They will have breakfast with one. They'll have a nightcap with another. They see them every day. And here, it's so funny. I was reading the article and I was like, in the article too, she's like, if you were to do that, if you were to just go knock on your friend's door right now, she would think you were a sociopath. like, it's just not how we function here in the US, right? It's like, I have to have a crazy number of texts with a friend before we solidify plans. And sometimes those get canceled and then rescheduled. And, you know, it's just the making of the time. And so I'd love to just hear your thoughts on this and just your experience and from research that you've come across, like what you think about all of that as far as like how we cultivate and maintain friendship here in the US.
Yes. So I have seen all the things that you're seeing. You know, we have fewer walkable cities, which does make it difficult to see friends. So that would be one factor if it involves some kind of commute, which requires gas and money. So we have fewer walkable cities, which directly impacts not just proximity, but by extension, the frequency with which we can see our friends. You also have a culture where working from home is a new thing and a glorious thing, but that has motivated a lot of people to move to where they want to live because now they're not beholden to the city where their company resides. So I have a lot of people who have told me, you know, like, gosh, I'm not even close to my friends because they've left. They don't have to be here. So feeling like they have more long distance friends. And then just, you know, recently the American time use survey, which is meant to show us how Americans spend their time, they found that we're spending more and more time alone. So I'll end with this. They found that in 2013, we were spending on average 6 hours a week with our friends. And today that's about 2 hours a week, a little more than 2 hours a week with our friends. And you'll notice I said 2013, which is like 7 years before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So this is a trend that was happening before the pandemic. I know we like to point to that time as the source of all our social ails, but it was happening before then. And so not only has that time decreased, but it's like, where did we put those extra hours? If they're not going to friends and that's declining, where do we put those extra hours? And we put them in our alone time bucket. So the number of hours we're spending by ourselves has increased exponentially. So as you kind of share the highlights and some of the key points of the article, I'm not surprised because the research does kind of support that trend.
Yeah. And so then I clicked on this other link and then this other one, it talks about, it's like my generation, we grew up playing in the streets, right? Like that's all I remember from my childhood. I was gone from sunup to sundown in the streets. Like just my parents never asked where I was. I was out with, you know, all the neighborhood kids and I didn't come home. Until dinner time. That was it. You were either wandering around to another friend's house, playing baseball in the street, whatever it was. And, you know, they talk about how so much is learned during that time of just being outside and dealing with different personalities, people of different ages, doing, you know, social negotiation, trying to figure out like, okay, if everybody doesn't agree that we're going to play this game, we have to figure out how to get to a solution. And just all of that in-person conflict is so important to regulating relationships as you get older, you know, like just that connection piece, that in-person connection is just so, so important. So I always wonder to myself how much damage we are doing by having kids kind of glued to their phones earlier on rather than trying to maintain and cultivate their friendships more in person. Because I feel like when you're behind that screen, there's so much you do that you probably wouldn't do in person, right? And I think there's so much that's taken out of context when you're trying to either talk about something really important via text or something, that when you're in person, you get a better idea of where that person's coming from. You know, I've definitely been under the umbrella of like reading a text and being like, can you see that? I feel like she's yelling at me right now. You know what I mean? But in reality, like if you were talking to that person face to face, I don't think, you know, you probably wouldn't have that viewpoint of it. You know, I think it can be very hard to figure that out. And so just navigating friendships as you get older, anyways, they were talking about how that piece of it could have something to do with it. Just like the friction that you encounter when you're younger by just navigating all these friendships with neighbors and things like that, you bring that into your 20s and 30s and you're able to navigate the friendship circle a little bit easier because you've had that conflict. But for those of us that grow up more maybe isolated, maybe we don't live in a neighborhood, maybe we're more online because of that, it can be a little bit more difficult to kind of like navigate. So I just found that to be really fascinating because obviously as we are becoming more technologically advanced, you start to think about what the caveats to that are. Like, what are the negative, you know, aspects of this? I think that can definitely be part of it, is that you think that you're less lonely online when you're engaging online, but in the end, it makes you more lonely. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes total sense.
Like, I don't know. And I think I was on, this is just kind of like some reflection that I'll just share really quick before we get into more questions. But when I was on Instagram years ago, when I had my account, it's funny because you feel less alone because you're kind of like, you have this built-in community and you're talking with some of these people, you know, on a daily basis, and you're connecting with them, or at least you think you are. And I kind of lost touch with some of my close friends that I know in real life, right? It's just kind of what happens. It's where you put your time and your priority. And once I deleted that and really said, I need to refocus on everything that's in front of me rather than something that's not. And that was my big reason for getting rid of this, along with some other things. But what I noticed once I got rid of it was that I wasn't spending enough time on the relationships that really, really matter to me. And I have built new and maintained better relationships with those that I have found to be not on social media. Like, I feel like I almost like gravitate to those people more often. I feel more of a connection with them. And it's funny because I know that some people that spend a lot of their time online, I don't connect with them as much. And I don't know that, you know, it's definitely because of that or not, but I just, from a personal experience, feel like that is definitely part of it. So anyways, I just wanted to share that because I just thought it was, those articles were really fascinating. And I'm sure we're going to dive into some more of that throughout our conversation today, Danielle. So I would love to know what originally sparked your interest in just studying friendships, and particularly friendships among women. Like, what sparked your interest in that originally?
Yeah, the short version of that is I was a high school teacher for about 6 years, and it was the number one thing that students wanted to talk about between classes, after school, were there issues with friends, mostly the young girls in the class. And then I became the academic chair, so I'm leading a department of more than 30 teachers, and we, you know, during staff meetings, it's one of the things they wanted to talk about is the social issues and conflicts happening in the classroom. And so when I left the classroom and I got into public relations, I suddenly found myself working with these high-achieving, charismatic women. And it wasn't long before I realized that they too, privately, were grappling with their own friendship issues. But you wouldn't know it by looking at them or looking at their social media account, but it was something that they were also trying to figure out. And long story short, I just had a moment of, okay, so at every stage of womanhood, we are working to navigate the complexities of being friends with other women. And so for the past 6 years, I've been leveraging my background in education to study what the research has to say about women's connection, cooperation, and communication.
Oh, that's really fascinating. I love that you started off as being a high school teacher, becoming this academic. Like, I think that's absolutely fascinating. And it shows how this happens so organically sometimes, where we start off in a field and then we kind of like divert wherever, whatever starts to interest us the most, it kind of like diverts us into a different direction. So from your research, what has been some of the most interesting things that you have found to be true?
I mean, there's so much, but again, I'll keep it short. I think the thing that is just resounding that I find myself saying all of the time is that we have got to stop talking about friendship as a recreational pastime, because it's about so much more than having people to go to brunch with. And if we continue to see it that way, we won't prioritize it because it feels like an extra, an add-on. When I'm done with the kids, if I have money in my budget, if I have spare time, then I'll make time to connect with other people. But with all the research that I've seen, whether it's, you know, women friends or guy friends, anybody, friendship, social support, it has a direct impact on your physical, mental, and emotional health. So the main mistake that I see us making kind of culturally, and a little bit of that is changing now, but is not talking about friendship as a wellness imperative. It is important that you make time to be in community with other people. If you're having trouble sleeping, if you're having health issues, if you're having mental health decline, I challenge you to look at how healthy your relationships are. And I'll end with this. Recently, everybody's kind of been abuzz about the findings that were just shared from a very extensive
study being conducted for more than 80 years by Harvard University. They've been trying to find what makes people happy. They've assessed all these different factors. Is it your income? Is it where you live? Is it whether or not you decide to have children? And they found that the number one factor that determines your overall well-being and life satisfaction is the quality of your relationships. And there's just, you know, very little literature on how do I enhance my platonic relationships, but it's a wellness imperative for us to figure out how to do just that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Have you come across in your research, is there any like allotment of time that research has indicated that should be allotted to become a friend with somebody? In other words, I try to talk to my kids about this, and my oldest is almost preteen girl. And so obviously I talk to her a lot about friendships because it can be obviously very complicated, as you alluded to when you were talking about your previous experience. I just feel like one of the most important things I can tell her is that becoming a friend with somebody or to be a friend to someone requires a lot of time to get to know them and to understand them. And I could have sworn I came across something that said like something like 200 hours or something. But have you come across anything like that in your research as to how many hours it would take to build a friendship with somebody, a real true like connection with someone?
Yes. Yeah, so a while ago, the University of Kansas, the gentleman there who conducts research on friendship and social connection and things like that, his name is Jeffrey Hall, and they attempted to quantify, you know, how long does it take to make a friend? And they found that it takes 50 hours to make a friend, like acquaintance/friend, 90 to make a close friend, and 200 a best friend. And okay. That's consistent with research that's come out 3 years ago now that echoed the same thing, conducted by Robin Dunbar. And he found that it takes about 34 hours to move someone from an acquaintance to a friend, which is echoing the same findings as the first study that I just told you about. And so I know that, you know, friendship, there's so much of it that's kind of elusive and subjective and all that. So, you know, there are some people who are going to say, oh, it doesn't take me that long. I feel like besties in the first 5 hours. And I get that. And I get that there's such thing as fast friends. But in my opinion, that speaks more to chemistry, which doesn't require real knowledge of a person. It doesn't require much trust. I don't know your character, but you know, sure, maybe we have this instant chemistry, which is very exciting, sure. But in terms of getting to know one another, like I can trust you. I've observed you in a myriad of different contexts. I know what you're like when you're mad. I know how, you know, so I don't know those things. You can't just download me on those things in the first couple conversations. They'd have to be demonstrated over time. And so, yeah, so I think that, you know, I kind of see my role as taking what does the research reveal about friendship? And then how can I make that tangible for people? What does that look like? So it's one thing to learn it, but how do I apply that? And that's kind of how I see just my overall role. And so, you know, if you realize, okay, it takes about 34 hours to move somebody from an acquaintance to a friend, no one says that all has to happen in a week. In fact, the research gets very specific. It says that can happen on average over, you know, 5 months' time. So how can I be intentional about clocking hours with this person? How can I challenge ideas I've been carrying about, oh, friendship should just be organic. I shouldn't have to try so hard. It should just happen, you know, is not necessarily true. And I'll end with this. There's actually a study where they asked people, do you believe that friendship should be easy, natural, and organic, or do you expect that it might take some work? And they followed these people over the span of 5 years. Those who said that they believe it should be easy, natural, and organic were reporting greater feelings of loneliness than the people who said, I expect that it might take effort. And so it is something you have to be, to some degree, a little strategic about if you want these long-term, high-quality relationships.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Now, obviously, as a mother, there's a lot of people listening that are mothers. I think this can be a whole episode in and of itself, obviously, trying to become friends with people once you become a mom, because I think so many things change and your time and your efforts are very much different once you become a mom. But can you talk a little bit about how friendships over time tend to shift and go through these different life stages? And then maybe just giving just your overall tips on how you can really focus on those friendships that you have cherished throughout your life and trying to hang on to those once you do become a mom.
You know, I'm so glad you asked that because I notice people get really discouraged when they notice a shift in their friendships, when they notice a decline in their friendships, it's very easy to get discouraged because you're comparing what you have currently to the way things used to be. But so much has changed since then. The scripts you used at 16 for friendship are not appropriate for you at 35. The demands that you had in your life at 15 have multiplied at the age of 35. So to some degree, we have to expect, okay, my friendships are going to change. And I think a lot of us know that intellectually to be true, but it is kind of, you know, tricky when you are feeling it. It feels rough, jarring, disappointing when it actually happens. And so, you know, to kind of help ground people, the first thing I tell them is to be careful around what you're liking and saving and how you're training your algorithm on social media. If you're saving a lot of content that is giving messages of hopelessness, people aren't like they used to be, friendship is so hard, adult friendships feel impossible. I just want to say, be careful about that. I don't mean to, you know, sound like I'm exaggerating or being dramatic, but be careful about that. Because if I begin to download the message that it's just impossible, and any attempts that I make to create or deepen friendships right now would be frivolous, it's directly going to impact the way that you engage when you do have opportunities in front of you, because subconsciously you don't even believe anything's possible for you right now. So I will first validate to say, if you feel like there's been a change in your friendships, this does happen along the life cycle. So sociologists find that we have a sort of friendship dip that happens in our 30s and 40s, which makes sense because think about the things you've got going on at that time. You know, many of us have children. And so, you know, that demands literally so much of your time. And, you know, you might be caring for aging parents. You might be clocking a lot of hours at work because you're in your prime. So it's important to you to advance in your career. You've got a lot of things going on. And the research also finds that this group has the least amount of leisure time than any other generation, on average 4 hours a day of leisure time. And I don't know what that looks like if you're a mom, which I feel like is even, you know, less time. I know that, you know, my husband and I the other day were like calculating. We're like, how many hours do we spend with them? Because we're kind of a very little screen time family. Like our kids get about 35 minutes a day. But that means we are very present and very active. We're doing workbooks. We're playing outside. We're building blocks with them. And that's like 2.5 hours, 3 hours a day, you know?
Yeah.
So we do have a lack of actual hours, which is a limited resource. And then a lot of us are burnt out just from capitalism and answering emails at 8 o'clock at night. And then we feel like we don't have it to give, right? And so if you're seeing a decline, that's totally consistent with the research. I would just say to not get hopeless and feel like this is what it's going to be. Because you notice I said a friendship dip. And by design, a dip means something goes down, but it comes back up as the kids get more independent and you can back away from work a little bit and you find your groove. So it's not going to be like this forever, but there are some things that you can do during this time to not feel so disconnected. The first is, I need you to get really clear about who you want to be intentional about. So if you are trying to be besties with 15 different people, you are going to feel overextended. And I say this to my fellow extroverted women, you know, I'm sorry, but trying to do 15 different coffee dates, I don't personally know if that's a good use, the best use of your time. If you're hungry for connection, you might have to get really clear on who your three women are, who you want to clock hours with, and build up. Like we just talked about, it takes 34 hours. I can't do that with everybody. So who are the three women who it looks like we have the same friendship goals, our values are aligned, and I just enjoy her company at the end of the day? I might want to be intentional. The second thing I'll say is I always encourage some kind of friendship ritual, which sounds kind of cheesy, but essentially what that means is, how can we put some aspect of our friendship on autopilot? Because I know that it's a joke, you know, that we tend to make about like, oh, it's so hard coordinating schedules. Yeah, you're right. So how can I remove the mental labor of constantly being like, okay, can you do next Thursday at 2 o'clock? I'm not doing that. Can we say, hey, every Friday morning at 10 o'clock, we FaceTime for 30 minutes. Or hey, every Wednesday, we walk the park with our kids at lunch. Like, how can we put this on autopilot so I know I'm going to see you? And it's not such a task to make that happen. And the last thing I'll say about how to find time for friends when you feel like it feels impossible in this season of life is to prioritize connection over friendship, which sounds a little counterintuitive, but I have some people who get so focused on, I need to make friends, I need to make friends, I need to make friends. And that's true. But I've noticed that you bring a certain pressure to every social interaction you have. Or if we're keeping it real, you get a little, you become kind of a critic because you're looking for your bestie, like secretly auditioning a bestie, and any difference, you're like, I don't know. And like, we dismiss her. What if you just prioritized connection first? Like, what if I just have a conversation with somebody in my mom group, and that just was like a really nice Monday afternoon? And that's all it was. If I want more, then I'll pursue more. But just focus on how can I have social interactions that are life-giving, and maybe it doesn't develop into something super serious, and maybe that's okay. And I think those things will help to keep us connected during a time when it feels like friendships are hard to come by.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to hear what you have to say too about, so say, you know, you were moved, you became a new mom in a new place to you, right? Mm-hmm. So your friends are distant and you're trying to, I think this is one of the hardest things for moms, is trying to cultivate that new community within a new place. And it can be obviously very scary. You don't know anybody. And what are your favorite tips for that type of a situation where you're a new mom, you're trying to navigate this, and you're just not sure where to start?
Yeah.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
So it, you know, I want to validate as a new mom, it is really hard. I mean, you're feeling especially isolated. I remember when I was breastfeeding, I was like, man, I'm really lonely. Like, I'm literally spending so many hours by myself in a room alone. And so it's really hard. You're trying to figure out who you want to be in this new season. So, you know, if you're trying to find mom friends or stay encouraged during this time, the first is there is technology to help you do that. And we've got to stop thinking, okay, that would make me desperate. No, it makes you resourceful. Mm-hmm. There are apps like Bumble for Friends where you're encouraged to lead with, hey, I'm a new mom looking for mom friends. And I've noticed women try to pull back on that because they're like, oh, I don't want to turn people off. But yeah, we're trying to expedite the process of finding your people, which means some people need to be turned off. They need to be able to say like, oh gosh, that's not what I'm looking for. We're not compatible. Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because now I'm going to more quickly attract the people who are like, oh my gosh, same. I need mom friends too. And mom friends, they just kind of get the lifestyle. They're flexible, things like that. So, you know, leverage technology. Bumble for Friends is a great app for finding people in your area who have the same goal. Another thing you can do is capitalize on the connections you do have when you're in the stores getting baby stuff or you're walking your baby in the park. I think we think, oh, that would be weird to say hello to this person. That would be strange to ask a question. It's really not. It's really not. And the average person is relieved that you went first. They're happy to have a little pleasant exchange. And so don't dismiss all the opportunities that you do count in your day to day because it would be weird to talk to a stranger or because you don't think it would lead to a friendship. You've got to get active in that way. And then the last thing I'll say is this, is it's really hard as a mom to not, I want to be delicate in saying this, but to not have your entire identity be mom.
Yeah.
And I wonder if sometimes we feel lonely because mm-hmm. we feel like we're just absorbed in that aspect of our identity. So I'll end with this. One exercise I tend to give to people who feel disconnected and unseen is to do this. I want you to think of the statement, I am blank, fill in the blank. And you would repeat this exercise like maybe 3 to 5 times. If you had to complete that statement with some aspect of your identity, what would it be? I am a mom. I am a mom. I am a Black person. I am a woman. I am a creative. I need people who can affirm those various aspects of my identity because I'm many things. Mm-hmm. So if you're forgetting that you're a creative and you're a woman of faith or you're a reader or a dancer, you might be feeling kind of disconnected right now because you're only tending to one aspect of your identity. So how can you kind of start moving your feet in the direction of people who can affirm the various aspects of your identity, I think that would give you a little more satisfaction, just like in life. And so that could be something for a mom who feels in the trenches, disconnected. You know, those are three tangible things to get a little more plugged in.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I was just, yes to everything you're saying. First of all, I love that you talked about putting yourself out there and asking the question first. I do think so much of that has been lost over the past years, right? I just think that we have become uncomfortable with that in-person connection, not because we don't think it's important or anything else. It's more comfortable to be behind a screen asking people a question. I think that that is so crucial and so important because you're right. The second that person asks the question, the other person on the other side is probably like, oh, I'm craving this connection. Like, I'm so glad you asked that. And that truly is how you build that connection with somebody that you seem to be interested in. Like, whether it's, you know, I don't know, hey, what stroller is that? Like, it's really cool. Or what baby carrier pack is it? You know, don't be afraid. I love that. And then the last part that you were just saying, oh my gosh, remind me again. See, I just went on that.
About your various aspects of identity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. So for 10 years, well, a little bit less than 10, having four kids and concentrating on the raising of the kid, the carrying of the kid, the breastfeeding the kid, all of those things, you certainly, at least I did, I lost myself and only referred to myself as a mom. And as you said, you were so many things before you became a mom. And all of those things are equal, if not more important, right? Like, they're important and you cannot lose those things. And I love that you kind of focused more on, hey, remember who you were and who you still are now that you are a mom. Because yes, being a mom is important, but having that connection to who that person was that enjoyed all of these other things prior is so important. And it wasn't until I really started to refocus and said, you know what? I really love, I don't know, working out. I really, really love being outdoors, finding friends. And now I have made new friends within the past, you know, 3-4 years that love being outdoors with our kids together or going on a quick trip in the mountains, whatever. Having the friendship built upon something that you both have in common that is something you've always loved to do is just, it's just exhilarating, right? It's combining your love of whatever it was prior to being a mom, but then mixing it in with this friendship of somebody that you really clicked with. And I think that that is really, really important. And I think you can find friends via those things you love. So, you know, like you said, whether it's yoga or dance or reading or, you know, whatever those things are, just try to figure out in your community how you can immerse yourself into those things. And it kind of will like follow along, you know, how it's supposed to, and you'll meet people that way. And don't be afraid to make that connection first and ask those questions, because asking somebody how they do their hair or complimenting something about them could be the start of a really strong friendship that you have forever. You know, you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really, really love that you mentioned that, because I think so often people concentrate on how you can make friends as a mom by using your children to connect. So like going to a breastfeeding. Again, I think there's a role for those. I think it's absolutely important to be in the trenches with the people that are in the trenches with you. I get that. And that's how you typically hear people talk about making friends as a mom, right? It's through your kids and activities that they do. And I think it's important to recognize what you like to do and who you were before you had kids and what you enjoyed, because then you just don't lose yourself as much. Coming from somebody who definitely lived that, I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to ask like a couple more nitty gritty questions. So for example, you know, say you have this friendship and as we've mentioned, like kids can be a big part of this, and just say your parenting styles are just completely different. You know, you're going this way, they're going the total opposite way with many things. And how do you navigate that? How do you address that type of a situation? What would you suggest?
So I hear you asking when you have mom friends and you find yourself disagreeing with just kind of their parenting style.
Overall parenting style. Yeah. And so once your kids get a little bit older, sometimes that can be a little bit tricky as what your values are and, you know, things maybe that they're allowed to do and things like that.
Yeah. This is really tricky. I'll say this. Recently, a friend of mine told me about something she did with her kids over the weekend. And I did not agree with the thing that she said she did. And she wasn't saying it like she was asking for my opinion. She just was like saying it in passing and kept it moving. And I say that to say, I know what it's like to have somebody who's your girl. And then you discover like, oof, I don't know. Here's what has been helpful to me in terms of like that judgment and trying to gauge, okay, is this just a difference or is this like an actual threat? The first is I ask myself, okay, this mom is making this decision because she genuinely believes in her mind that that's what's required to keep her kids safe and happy. At the end of the day, that's what most of us are trying to do. Mm-hmm. We want our kids to be safe. We want them to be happy. And that helps to ground me like, okay, because it's really easy to not go into what I think a lot of women have a tendency to do. And I'm about to actually test this to do a research study to see if this is true. But my theory hasn't been tested, is that I think women are more prone than men to conflate certain disappointments with character flaws. So we're quick to go from like, ooh, if she allowed her kids to do this, she's this kind of person and I can't be friends with this kind of person. And it happens so fast. And so having to see, okay, is this a decision that she's making because she wants her kids to be safe and happy? And it's not a threat to who I am. It's not a direct threat to our friendship or my values. And it doesn't make her a bad or lesser person. It's something I have to do very technically to catch myself because it's so easy to start being like, oof, she's not who I thought she was. Wow, I can't believe she believes that. So we have to catch ourselves, like really create a moment between the information you just learned or the thing that you just witnessed and asking, okay, is this a reflection of her character and is it a threat to my values? Okay. For the things that you realize, okay, it's not a threat and she's not a bad person, you are going to have to find a way to just accept that she makes choices that do not mirror your own. And that's just what it is. And a lot of us are going to have to practice that. I know I darn sure do. Mm-hmm. But then there are the times you do realize, okay, she's living a certain lifestyle with her kids and things like that. And I'm noticing the influence that has on my children. I'm noticing that it puts us in awkward situations. There's a way to sometimes say things where people don't feel judged, but you're also honoring what makes you feel safe, but letting them know that you do have kind of a certain boundary around what you're living in your home. So ask yourself, if we do want to continue to engage, is it possible by me letting her know this is what the parameters will have to be. So you want to be tender here because we don't want to say it like they're a rule that we're laying down. So for example, I might say something to the effect of like, hey, we actually, and this is just a random example, my kids are 5 and 2. So I might say something like, hey, I want the kids to come over and stay the day. Now we don't typically give him sugar because he doesn't really respond well to that. It's just something we don't do. So when you're watching him, I know the other kids might have it, but it's just not something that works for us. So are you cool with that? You know, to let her know, like, I'm not judging you, but it doesn't work for us, mm-hmm. or it doesn't work for him. And not like we don't believe that sugar is healthy. So, because anybody's going to say, like, oh, so I guess my choices you believe are inferior or misinformed. So the language of just saying, like, hey, do you mind not giving him sugar? Because that just doesn't work for us. Right. Might work for you, don't work for us. Okay. And then any issues we have beyond that would be maybe a respect issue. Like if she went against me anyway, or that's another issue, right? Not respecting the boundaries. But that way I'm operating authentically in what makes my family comfortable and letting you know that if we're going to blend together or vacation together or hang out tonight, this is what it's going to have to be. And that might work. You might have people who are able to maintain that separation with you and be like, oh, totally get it, girl, do your thing, right? Mm-hmm. And then you might have those who are like, okay, well, and they become offended, they become indignant. And unfortunately, if we are integrating our lives as women, we are deeply involved. It's hard to separate. You know, as a matter of fact, the research shows that men integrate their friends into their lives to the degree of a cousin, but women integrate other women into their life to the degree of a sibling. So it is hard sometimes to separate. We're like, we're all in there, right? Which is why our friendships are more intimate. So and to some degree, that's a great thing. But yes, it can make it kind of complicated if we're, you know, raising kids side by side and living together and all these things. And then we see some differences. So if we find that the way that we parent is something that is going to be a threat to our values, or it's going to negatively influence how we're trying to run our household or how we're trying to protect our children, I am going to have to make tough decisions around if we can be friends. And this is the last thing I'll say. If a woman is listening right now and you're realizing, oh gosh, I'm in that stage where I'm trying to find ways to integrate her into my life and be close friends, but this really is getting in the way. And I don't think I can maintain the friendship because it's that disruptive. You know, I just want you to know she doesn't have to be a villain for you to remove yourself. And a lot of times we're torn because we're like, but she's not a bad person.
Yeah.
I would hope she's not a bad person. That's why you guys were friends in the first place. Yeah, she's a good person. Right. But if you look and you say, gosh, us maintaining a friendship like we've been doing is creating confusion in our home and it's really stressful and it's disrupting the way my kids act and think. I think we have to separate ourselves. It doesn't make her a bad person. It just means it's no longer compatible to like the health of other things that you've got going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is more often to happen too when you've had a friend that you've had forever, right? Like you have known them for years and years and years before you became parents. And, you know, sometimes those things, you just kind of almost kind of drift apart and realize, oh, wow, like, I don't know, you know, I think things have gone in a different direction than I expected. And I love what you said about just making sure that you analyze the situation and say, listen, like, is this something is making me unsafe, making my children unsafe? Or is this just a decision that I personally wouldn't make, but everybody's, you know, everyone's safe. And, you know, this is fine for her to make for her own family. And she does think that this is the right thing. And I, mm-hmm. and as you said, I think the majority of parents are not out there to do something detrimental to their kids. That's just not at all what is occurring. I mean, of course, there are exceptions and there's crazy things that happen in the world. But for the most part, the parents you meet on a daily basis, they're like, listen, I really want to do this for my child because I think it will benefit them. You know, they for mm-hmm. some reason think it will be beneficial, right? And, you know, that's neither here nor there. And I think it is really important to just do you and worry about how you're raising your own kids. And if it does become an issue, I'm always a huge proponent of talk about it. You know, no one's going to be able to read your mind. My husband's always like, listen, Lizzie, I can't read your mind. So you got to tell me what's going on. Like, I'm not just going to be like, oh, you're upset because I didn't do X, Y, and Z. Like, I don't know what you're thinking. You need to tell me. And, you know, the same goes with friendships too, right? Like the being able to talk about the hard things is exactly that. It's hard, but it also really helps to maintain and build your connection, just like within your own intimate relationship. It's mm-hmm. so important. I know we're kind of winding down on time. And I really, if you have enough time, are you okay? Like 5 or 10 minutes over?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, perfect. I wanted to ask your opinion. Like if you were to be in front of one of your high school students and talking to them about friendships, what would be some of the like key takeaways that you would tell them to help them have a good foundation for how they maintain their friendships as they move through the teen years and into adulthood?
Yes. Three things right off the top. From working with high schoolers, this is what I found myself saying all the time. The first is you're allowed to have different types of friends. Some are besties, some are not very close to you. Sometimes some like different interests, and that's okay. And I have noticed, especially with women, an intent focus on finding a bestie and leaving everybody else out, or they want it to be super, super deep or nothing. And people, according to the research, people with relational diversity are happier than people without it. So what that means is people who have their happy hour friend and their Bible study friend and their neighbor friend are happier people. Mm-hmm. Okay. So don't get so locked in on certain kinds of friendship or one singular person that you are depriving yourself of the richness of what your friendship landscape could be. So I'm giving you permission to have different kinds of friends. That's a good thing. Would be the first thing I find myself often saying. The second thing is, it sounds kind of corny, but it's true. And that's, you have got to be the kind of friend that you want. There is so much focus on, I need people who serve me, and I need friendships that serve me. And I need this, you know, I need friends who can do blah, 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 blah. Okay. Everything you just listed as a requirement, do you do that too? You want friends who are honest and fun and authentic, and they communicate directly with you if they have an issue, and they're consistent and they initiate. Yeah, you have a long wish list. If somebody turned that wish list right back to you, could you honor that? And that's the very first thing. Don't be out here requiring things that you are unwilling to give. And also don't say, well, depending on how they are with me, this is how I'll be. I don't mean to sound intense, but the word there is integrity. That means no matter if you give it to me or not, I personally believe this is how I should engage as a friend. So that's what I'm going to do. Yeah. Now, I don't mean to be foolish and to be just taking mistreatment or anything like that. That should be obvious. I would never advocate for that. But whatever it is you're looking for, you've got to be that kind of person to other people. And then the last thing I would say for successful friendships kind of is an extension of what you just said, which is you got to get comfortable having conversations that are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You just have to, there's a women's basketball coach, I'm forgetting her name now, but she went viral recently because she had this really inspirational speech. And she was saying that it's going to be hard, but you have to learn how to do hard better. And so having hard conversations is really tough and uncomfortable. But you got to do it, because the alternative is you are breeding resentment for your friend. You are over accommodating and to the point where you feel uncomfortable, resentful. You start gossiping more, I've noticed, because you are too scared to say it to the main person. So now you're complaining about her to other people, and that's stirring stuff up because you don't have the skill of saying, hey, you made a comment last night at the party and it made me feel some kind of way. And I'm not quite sure what you meant by that. Like, what did you mean? Okay. Like it's uncomfortable and you got to do it, especially because the research shows that on the other side of healthy conflict lies the platonic intimacy that you've been looking for. And so if you are walking around with the feeling of like, people don't really know me, they don't really see me, I wonder if one of the barriers is your unwillingness to share with them your needs, boundaries, and desires. And it might be uncomfortable, but the right people welcome that data. And so those are three things I would say. If you want to be more satisfied in friendships, these might be some truths worth holding on to.
Yeah, I love that. And I had my daughter had a little peek of that. And I'll just share this story really quick, because it kind of embodies what you were just saying. She's young, she's 10. And she has had the same friend since she was like two, you know, they went to preschool mm-hmm. together and all those things. And, you know, inevitably, like that ship is going to, you know, get some holes in it. We got to mm-hmm. patch them up, you know, that's just what happens. Especially if you've had somebody since you were a friend since two, things will get added into the mix that need to be, you know, dealt with. And if you don't, and then just resentment builds up. Right. So she's very good at, she is really good at that relational diversity. She's got friends with the sport, or she's got friends that like to play outside, building forts. She's got friends like, so she kind of diversifies herself like that. And she has friends of different ages, and she'll hang out with the kids next door who are really young. And, you know, I think it's so important, like you said, but you know, her friend started to have some issues, and who knows what, if it was just that she felt left out a lot of the time, like if she was doing something else with other friends. And so it became really hostile, just her kind of like saying things out loud to her and kind of making fun mm-hmm. of her and things like that. Also though, I mean, again, all of these things, super normal for girls' development, right? Like, mm-hmm. and you know, we'll never know exactly, pinpoint exactly what was going on, but whether it was jealousy or what have you, mm-hmm. these things happen. They happen all the time and all different ages, right? It's a totally normal thing to happen. And so teaching her to navigate this was so important to me, because I kept saying to her, this is going to happen again and again and again. And you learning how to navigate this is so important. So I'm so happy that you were experiencing this. I know it's tough. I know that it's hard, but experiencing this and walking through it and learning what to do is so important. And so she's the type of kid who doesn't like to create conflict. She doesn't want to say, hey, listen, I don't like this. Why are you doing this? And so she learned a couple of tough things. Like one of her other friends, you know, this good friend she had since she was two, was trying to pull her away from this other friend in particular and saying things about that person. And so she almost lost that friend in the crossfire because she didn't stand up for her friend. You know what I mean? And so I said to her, you need to do the right thing. So whatever you think the right thing is, that's what you need to do. And in that particular instance, standing up for your friend, you know, was the right thing to do. And she didn't like that you didn't do that. She saw you walk away from her with the person that was saying things about, you know, so there were just so many things she learned about. And so now she was able to confront the friend that she disappointed, right? Like, listen, I should have done X, Y, and Z, and I'm really sorry that I didn't. And I hope you're willing to give me another shot. And, you know, of course, they're still friends, you know, but even navigating the other friendship, they have come out on the other side of that a year later. They took this space and they've worked on each other and they've come back together this year and are now chatting again. And so it's kind of like this beautiful vision of, hey, like we can have this conflict and all of it is completely normal, and teaching our kids to work through that. And, you know, that won't always happen. They won't maybe not always come out on the other side of it still friends, you know, and that's okay too. But just to see it kind of come full circle and say like, hey, okay. And we're both stronger for this. We're able to say, hey, listen, the next time that happens, I'm going to stand up for myself. I'm going to say, what's this about? Why are you upset about this? Why are you picking on my other friend or whatever it is, you know? So, you know, just learning to stand up for what's right and learn to, you know, just speak for yourself. I think that can be very hard for younger girls to do because they don't want to create that conflict depending on their personality. So yeah, I love that. Okay. So as we kind of close up here, is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't hit throughout the podcast so far?
I think I would just, we said a lot of things today. You asked a lot of really good questions, and I just always want to leave people with a sense of optimism. And I'm not a fluffy woo-woo person. I like to know the research and data, but it always comes down to you have to maintain some sense of optimism in your friendships. And that doesn't mean toxic positivity, but it means that you are very aware of any challenges that lie ahead, but you also believe that they can be overcome. If you're currently feeling a little isolated, if you're currently feeling like, man, the friendship group that I've cultivated for myself doesn't fit anymore. We're not morally aligned or whatever it is. But I don't know if there's better. So I'd rather just keep these friendships because I don't know that there's more that's possible for me, or I believe it's too late. I need you to maintain optimism because pessimism will keep you stuck. And I know it might be tempting for some of us to just say, well, I don't have time for friendship, or people have let me down, and so I'm just over it. But I heard Raina Cohen, who is the author of the book, The Other, Significant Others, she recently said on a podcast interview, I'd rather have the issues of community than the issues of isolation. Yeah. And so people will hurt you. They will let you down. Friendships will evolve. But I'd rather you have that than to be by yourself. And so I appreciate you for carving out this time to have this conversation because it's so important. And I appreciate you for allowing me to lend my voice to the conversation around motherhood and friendship.
It was so wonderful. I loved our conversation. You hit so many great points that I think we all needed to hear, you know? So we can end with two questions I always ask everybody I have on. So the first question is, if you could give one piece of advice to moms, what would it be?
If I could give one piece of advice to moms, I think it would just be that if you're worried about being a good mom, you probably are a good mom. that's helped me with my anxiety. Is like, if you're wondering, am I feeding them the right things? You're probably a good mom.
Yeah.
So be encouraged.
Yes, I do like that a lot because it is true. Okay. Last question is, if you could make one meal for your family that everyone would eat, that's relatively quick and easy.
Oh God.
You can get McDonald's as an answer or pizza or anything. I've had all of these different.
I still don't want to be judged.
Oh my gosh, stop. No one's judging you. Trust me.
You know what? I really like making chicken stir fry. Sometimes they want it, sometimes they don't. But you know, you've got your chicken, you've got veggies, you've got a little bit of rice, and it's easy to make, and it kind of hits all the things.
Yeah.
So chicken stir fry is kind of like a go-to for us when they're in the mood and they're feeling it. So that's kind of like our go-to.
Love it. And it can be easy if you just like pick up a chicken at the store and, and you just cut up some veggies. Yeah, totally.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much, Danielle, for taking the time out of your busy day to talk to us about this. You were wonderful.
I appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. All resources mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes on lindsayandco.com. To continue these important conversations, head over to Motherhood Meets Medicine on Instagram. Let me know what you learned from this episode and who you would love to hear from next. I always love getting feedback from you. If you're finding value in this podcast, please rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend. This will help us to reach even more women from around the world. I'll catch you next week. Until then, don't forget to find some time to unplug, unwind, and have a little fun.